Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with Rochelle Granite, Deputy Assistant Secretary for Human Resources and Chief Human Capital Officer at the U.S. Department of the Treasury. Also joining us in our conversation from IBM is Sally Thomas. Rochelle, as you know, employee feedback can be a very valuable tool for understanding the work environment. Could you elaborate a bit on the Best Places to Work initiative and the annual employee survey? How have you implemented any of the insights that you've gathered from this survey?
It was really driven in part by the recognition that if we're going to attract and retain the talent we need to accomplish our mission, we really need to focus on employee engagement and employee satisfaction. Treasury really needs to be one of the best places to work, and that is a huge selling point for agencies who rank high on the Partnership for Public Service's Best Places to Work rankings. Based on the 2006 survey, Federal Human Capital Survey, upon which the rankings are based, in the 2007 rankings, we were 14 out of 30, and we want to get into the top 10. The Partnership for Public Service was very interested in helping agencies make improvements, and Treasury was quite eager to work with the partnership. And the partnership did an analysis of the results of our 2006 survey, and they assessed where did we score well and need to continue to score well on, you know, build on those strengths. And where was the area on the survey where if we could improve in our scores in those areas, we would make a significant difference in our overall score? And what they concluded was the area where we had some weakness was the area that's referred to as leadership effectiveness. And that doesn't mean that our leaders aren't effective. But what it means is in those questions around the survey that go to issues around how do employees perceive the way in which their senior leaders, not their immediate supervisors, but their senior leaders communicate with them, share information, value their input, and things like that, we didn't score quite as well as we might. And so we developed a work group that involved folks from across the department, especially those bureaus that scored perhaps not as well as other bureaus, and engaged this task force in developing a plan around the best places to work, focusing largely, not exclusively, but largely around those leadership effectiveness issues. There were some key aspects to the program. One was the workforce needs to know that we take these surveys seriously and that we learn from the information they provide and we work to improve in those areas where we need improvement and build on the positive aspects. And each bureau developed action plans around those areas that needed particular work. And we also convened focus groups of managers and focus groups of line employees, and they were facilitated discussions around key questions that drove at the root causes for the perceptions around leadership effectiveness. One of the areas around leadership effectiveness that's key is that things get communicated to the workforce, that communicate lines of communication throughout the organization at all levels of the organization are sound. So some of what the work groups are doing is developing tools around that, including work on a video, on new orientation materials that really focus on the organization mission. We've done that a lot in our performance management system in ensuring that they understand how what they do supports the mission. It's helpful for them to understand and appreciate what others in the organization are doing. We also held a Best Places to Work symposium, which was attended by the senior leadership across the department. It was also simulcast and videotaped so that employees could see it and they could see it on their desktop computers. Secretary Paulson spoke around employee engagement, employee satisfaction to share those best practices. And we also brought in senior leadership, largely the chief human capital officers of several agencies that scored very well on the Federal Human Capital Survey or had marked improvement, and they shared their best practices. And that was a very well received symposium. It was at the end of March, and I think it reflected senior leadership commitment to these issues.
That's great. I wish you success in getting into the top 10, as you mentioned. So along similar lines, given the high rate of federal employees who may be eligible for retirement in the upcoming years, this certainly is going to create a loss of a lot of the institutional expertise and memory. And as you mentioned, I believe in our first segment, that becomes a challenge for the organization. Could you tell us how you're mitigating the pending retirement wave within Treasury?
Well, I should give you a sense of what we're facing. It's not dramatically different than a lot of other agencies of our size. The average Treasury employee is 48 years old and has over 16 years of experience. Based on recent running of our data, 21% of our employees will be eligible to retire this fiscal year. And in 2010, that number will increase to 29% and then increase to 39% in fiscal year 2012. Now, of course, it's based on our current data. So obviously new folks are going to be coming in. So these are somewhat shifting stats, but it still is a daunting number. It's especially daunting because there was a period of, I'd say, significant attrition and little hiring in the 90s, so that we really do have people in the beginning of their careers in somewhat large numbers. We do have a bit of a gap around those mid-level folks who would go into key leadership positions. And that certainly factors into our analysis of our leadership gaps and our succession planning. One of the key things that we are doing to meet that challenge is, first of all, we're recognizing that we very much need to enhance our ability, the tools we use to recruit talent. That includes department-wide marketing strategy to build on the great marketing efforts that some of the bureaus have been able to develop, with the recognition that we really need to be recruiting at all levels. We're not just recruiting entry level. We've recognized that we really should tap into second career folks who would come in mid-level and even senior level. And one of the interesting things we're doing in that regard is the Fed Experience Project with IBM and the Partnership for Public Service, where we're tapping into folks who are retiring from the private sector. And as a pilot, we're focusing on IBM, and we're focusing largely on those mission support occupations, where folks who have had careers in the private sector in skills and areas that are relevant to our work, they want to make a contribution, they want to continue working, and they're looking for new challenges, and we really need to tap that resource. So we have a series of things we're doing, and of course, one of the things that we need to do in the hiring arena is not just marketing, but it's really improving the way in which we recruit and hire. Simplifying the hiring process, just simplifying vacancy announcements and having model vacancy announcements that are used across the board around those occupations that are mission-critical occupations for which we are doing recruitment across the department. So those are just a few examples.
Now, Rochelle, along the lines of potential retirements, what can you tell us about Treasury's knowledge management strategies to retain that knowledge?
All the Treasury bureaus have their own internal leadership development programs, which, if done well, are a critical way and an excellent way to ensure that we transfer institutional knowledge. If we use mentoring programs well, if we use developmental assignments well, so that as we're developing people, they get experience within their organizations and outside their organization, we are doing a good job about transferring institutional knowledge. You know, we've deployed automated tools around training in our learning management system is one way in which we do that. That system allows us to do training across the department in key areas. It allows us to both input our own type of training, but also make accessible to employees very easily other automated online training. And it also allows us to track development programs and track training efforts on an individual level to ensure that employees who we anticipate or want to groom to move to different positions are getting the training and knowledge that they need to move into those positions in the future. We're ensuring that we're doing that knowledge transfer. Of course, we use what flexibilities we have to incentivize folks not to leave. that has limited success, and some of the constraints there revolve around the current retirement rules and systems. And there are some changes that we are seeking, that OPM, the administration, has been seeking, but you know, those have not yet been enacted.
Now, Rochelle, given the expanding complexity of your office workload, could you tell us more about Treasury's efforts to analyze workload requirements?
A good example around changing workload requirements really comes from our business areas. And I think the best example is at the Internal Revenue Service, where we've had an evolving and significant shift in some workload demands as a result of the increased effort to encourage taxpayers to file electronically. And it's something that Congress has mandated. It's something that is beneficial to the government to encourage as many taxpayers to file electronically as possible. That, of course, results in a significant reduction in the need for employees to handle the paper processing of tax returns.
Rochelle, I want to go back to the topic of retention for a moment. Could you tell us about Treasury's efforts to develop and implement an agency-wide performance management system? Specifically, what have you done to link pay with performance as a means to enhance your ability to compete and retain a highly effective executive group?
Okay. Well, why don't I discuss that in two parts, because it's a different experience and implementation on the executive level from the non-executive level. As you may know, in 2004, a new pay system, a pay-for-performance system, was implemented government-wide for the senior executive service. At Treasury, like all agencies, we took shifting to that system very seriously and really changed the way in which our performance management was done department-wide, where previously each bureau had its own executive performance plan and system. We developed, through, again, a collaborative effort across the department, a single SES performance plan that had three standard competency-based responsibilities and then provided for 5 to 8 results-based performance commitments, which are unique to each executive, which must be tied to organizational performance and the strategic plan. That was a shift in culture, a need to educate executives on what that meant to be measured that way and what that meant to measure their subordinate executives that way, and really developing and enhancing a performance culture that was measured in a way that hadn't quite been measured before. But that said, it did change the way in which pay decisions were made. They had to be linked to performance. They needed to take into account not only individual performance but organizational performance, and it was very focused on results. And we developed tools to assess organizational performance. We developed a tool that was used by each bureau that sort of rolled up data from across the fiscal year around performance measures, including things around Federal Human Capital Survey, HEART scores, and things like that. And a bureau head assessment of the bureau as a whole's accomplishments during the course of that fiscal year. And that information is shared with the performance review boards, et cetera. One of the challenges here to making significant change with respect to incentivizing performance with the pay as a carrot is the reality of pay compression in the SES. You can have the most outstanding performer in your bureau and who delivered the most significant results, and the pay increase that you can give is rather insignificant because of pay compression. And so, of course, that then shifts the focus to the bonus system. You know, we have developed a system where we have standards for what ratings and how, drive certain levels of flexibility around performance bonuses, and the performance review boards are very much a part of assessing that across their organizations. Senior leadership at the department at the deputy secretary level has a role in ensuring that the ratings and pay adjustments and bonuses are consistent with organizational performance. We have greater flexibility at the GS level. We do have some bureaus that have exception from the GS scale and do have pay-for-performance systems similar to the SES. But more importantly, even within the GS system, we have really driven a shift at the bureaus to ensure that their performance management systems, which are unique to each bureau, but are focused on results and a results-based performance culture, and have systems that are able to tie to the strategic plan so employees understand where they are in helping the agency meet the strategic plan and strategic goals and organizational goals, but also that they understand that their performance rating and performance awards, whether they're cash awards or other types of incentives, time off awards, that it is very much driven by performance and by delivering results.
Great. What does the future hold for the U.S. Department of Treasury? We will ask Rochelle Granite, Deputy Assistant Secretary for Human Resources and Chief Human Capital Officer, to share with us when the conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.